It is July 19th, 2021. This is Atlanta United FC Weekly, a Home Before Dark podcast. Good. Just the double. No Kevin yet. Thank you guys for tuning in on this lovely, disgusting, thunderstormy, rainy Atlanta evening. I am Tim Herb. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Dan James, to the right of me.
Good evening, Timothy. Good evening.
Good evening. Is that Stark Tower that I see in your camera? Is that Stark Tower?
It is.
You're right. Yeah. And Thanos is taking over Stark Tower with the Infinity Gauntlet. I see Darth Vader, or maybe it's Kylo Ren is trying to stop.
Well, I've got Darth Vader and Kylo Ren. That Darth Vader's having to use dual blasters instead of his lightsaber.
Oh, so. Interesting.
Yeah,
I've always wondered, like, why? What's with the hilt on Kylo Ren's?
I don't know, because
lightsaber.
I mean, it's like a little hand guard, because, you know, if you're cutting down, then, you know, might slip, and then it helps catch the other lightsaber.
But isn't the point of a hilt on a sword so that you don't lose grip and don't hit the blade? But instead with this, it's more blade. Like, wouldn't your hand just hit it and just your thumbs, like your hand would be gone, right?
I think it's for to protect your hand, but it's also protecting from, because, you know, if people are slashing down on you, you want to be able to, like, have their blade hit yours, but then not slice your fingers off, so it will stop their blade. Apparently, I don't know. Yeah. I'm sounding like some guy who plays like a lot of. Is it leering? It's not leering.
LARPing. Not
LARPing. Sorry.
Yeah, we're not here to. We're not going to shit on LARPers and call them lepers,
no,
Dan. We're not calling them lepers. We're not calling them lepers. Thank you, guys. We got a loaded trap tonight. We had Ellie Beaven, Dean Worley, Richard Gordon, Kendrick Brock. Who else do we got in here? We got Carl Seggy. We got Chiefs coach Steve asking if Kevin is okay. Yeah, he's fine. He's got a work thing.
Don't worry about him.
He's fine. We got Max Plays Games, 492, Brittany S, Octavio Mangura, Bradley D, aka Kevin Bradley D. Maybe that's why he's not joining. He's in the trap tonight. We got Dirty Bird Person, Scott McMillan, new to the trap. I appreciate you joining us. Yeah. Haleto. We got Haleto in here too, saying LARPers are allowed to drink water. Yes, that's very true. I feel like Kroger should go up and drop off some blackberry citrus spicy water to the Marietta training grounds. I know it'll hurt the... It probably hurt the players' throats a little bit to be drinking seltzer while they're working out, but it's better than nothing, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's a little acidic as well, so I don't think it totally quenches the thirst. But
I don't know, man. Michelle Paravani joining us. Mateo saying he's just here for the hindsight jokes. Chris Smith, Iron Tooth, in Mexico? In Mexico, what are you doing down in Mexico? You were just over in Europe. I think he's over there teaching maybe... On the continent, I believe. We got For the Culture. We got Greg joining us. Nathan Explosion. It's loaded tonight. We appreciate you guys tuning in. It is a fun evening. It is. Kevin is missing it. Percy Herrera joining us. Chris is trying to border cross. I see that. Not to blow up your spot. He says he's trying to get into the U.S. So I'm not trying to blow up your spot, but... Anyway, or he's going to get Tata out of Mexico. He's trying to break him loose.
It's probably having a blast. I'd love to go to Mexico.
Yeah, I feel like there's some stuff we need to talk about.
Well, I mean, was Chol offside? A little bit.
He was, right? Like,
well, so I listened to the radio call initially, and they were going off like he was onside because the defender made a play. But then I watched it back today and I was like, oh no, he was totally offside.
Yeah, that was not a deliberate play back. Like, that wasn't like, there was a deliberate play back. I don't know if you caught that, and I can't remember which defender it was.
No, there was a play back, but the initial strike, he was offside of that.
Yeah.
So, but it was...
There was another point in the game, though, where I think Andrew Farrell passed the ball back to their keeper, and he picked it up. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember shouting, like, "What? How is that not a free kick in the box?" Because he picked up the ball. Like, it was a deliberate pass back.
I wouldn't be surprised if that actually happened and we got nothing from it, because that's been the way it's been in the past couple of matches.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's definitely been a little frustrating to watch. Elliot Beaven saying hashtag Dan in. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Dan in what? In the hole? What?
No, Dan in real life. The movie. He's talking Dan about the movie. Yeah, he's talking about the movie with Steve Carell.
That's cool.
Yeah, Carl's right. I mean, it's an indirect free kick, right? It should have been an indirect free kick in the box. Whatever. I digress. We lost 1-0 to the best team in the East. I know they haven't been playing their best soccer, but they're still, what, the second best attacking side in all of MLS, and we only gave up a single goal to an absolutely beastly Gustavo Bow, who I feel like has aged probably 5 years in the past year since he got to MLS. He looks a lot older than whenever he first came in at the beginning of last year.
Yeah, he's... I thought we played a pretty good game. I wasn't so... I was kind of upbeat about it, even though we lost, yes, but we only lost by one. So,
yeah, we lost
a draw.
Right. We lost without Santi Sosa. We lost without Joseph Martinez. We lost without Joseph Conway starting the entire game. Jackson Conway. I want to see Joseph Conway. I want to see a fusion of the two. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think it was the worst game that we could have played. I thought we played pretty well against a very organized side.
Competent.
I think competent is kind of understating it too. Whenever you look at, they were showing key pass leaders in MLS, and Carlos Heel is the second person. And I want to hear somebody say that Julian Gressel is still an upgrade over Brooks Lennon when Brooks Lennon's playing right back and still has the second most key passes in MLS, but still half that of Carlos Heel. Like, it's just another level with that guy, the way that he's operating in the attack for New England. They're a good team. It's crazy what they've done in 2 years whenever they got rid of the bald version of Gabriel Heinze, I guess, and Brad Friedel. I mean, maybe we get our Bruce Arena, as much as I don't want to say I hate Bruce Arena, but maybe with Heinze having very, very many parallels, it seems like, to Brad Friedel and the way that he managed this team, have him out in 13 games, whatever it was. And I think Brad Friedel was somewhere around the same lines.
Right.
Bring in somebody like Bruce Arena. I don't know. Just solidify the team. Get somebody who I feel like, and we can get into this later and it might be a better discussion. I'm sure we'll rehash a lot of this whenever Kevin gets in. But yeah, there are guys out there, I feel like, to be had.
Yeah, well, I think just going back to Carlos Heel, he's got the most assists in MLS with 7, and they've got a couple of guys who have scored 3 goals each, like not just one each. So Brenner and Barriel have each got 3 goals. It's pretty impressive. It's weird to have so many people with, more than one goal.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I see a name I haven't seen in forever, Matt Wisniewski in the trap. Yeah, and Gully Cuban, a.k.a. I believe that is Gabe Lajas, that is joining us on Twitch, watching us on Twitch. Yeah, it's going to be a lot to keep up with in a trap without a third person to sit and kind of troll it. But yeah, man, it's...
Wow, Brian Daniels, that's someone we haven't seen for a while.
Yeah, he usually comments the day after. He's joining us live because why not? Why not talk about the elephant in the room? I can't remember who it was. Emilio Corsi, I think, was his name on Twitter. Because I'd sent out, it was very appreciative of Jason and Mike Conti doing that kind of post-mortem yesterday after the press conference. Mostly because I needed, something to listen to while I did yard work last night. And
After Heinz's press conference?
Yeah, after Heinz's press conference. They did an hour off the woodwork. It was pretty great. And then I had posted that in appreciation. Amelia Corsi said they had to relieve the pressure before our podcast tonight. So it's... Right. There was like a...
I know. I thought we're just going to have completely measured and calm takes coming from us and the trap.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't know where to start. If we just talk about... We'll get to the Heinz stuff in a minute. And maybe we'll just kind of bait people. But what did you see from the New England game that you saw as a positive? I know you said that you were pretty happy, all things considered, with the performance that we put on.
Yeah, I thought Moreno was pretty good. You know, he managed to get he got a real decent shot on goal, which unfortunately Knighton parried away, and we made one bad thing is we made the backup goalkeeper there one of their best players, which was really frustrating. But it's kind of something Atlanta United does. I actually thought Alan Franco wasn't too bad either. He had a good couple of break and run starts, but one of the frustrating things was seeing the diagonal balls. And so they would do a switch. So like Lennon would pass it over, or because it was Ambrose starting, whoever was on the left would pass it over. And it seemed like always their back, the New England back would just intercept the pass, like,
It was Mulroney, right?
We had three
in the back between Campbell, Alan Franco, Anton Walks. You had Brooks Lennon. I feel like they're anagrams of each other. I get tongue-tied with them sometimes. But then you had Mulroney, and then in the middle, what did you have? You had
it was Moreno and Sedic, who played really well.
Amar Sedic is great. I keep going, Dan. Sorry.
Yeah, no. But then we would, you know, you would have these typical, like, clever little through balls that just would never find their target or would just get intercepted. So it was pretty frustrating. I thought Kubo had one or two good efforts, but he just doesn't have the legs to get to the ball. So again, it was kind of a waste. And then eventually they brought on Jackson Conway, but it didn't really come to much, really. Alec Cann was all right. Would have kept a clean sheet without Anton Walks having that deflection from Gustavo Bo's shot, which went in and put us 1-0 down. And I thought then returning and getting out Charles' goal called offside was pretty disappointing and kind of. And then it was just kind of just more of the same. You know, tons of possession, going back and getting it forward and then passing it back and then just not getting those attacking, really the attacking chances to get shots on goal. But we did get more than a few shots on goal. Let me just go check out the stats. Yeah, we got more. We have 15 shots on goal to 13. So I think we both had 5 on target, but then we had like 5. They blocked us like 5 more times, or 5-3, which... Block shots are getting really frustrating because it seems like every time we try and take a hit, we're getting a block shot every time it tries to go through traffic. I think Moreno's shot from just outside the 18 has been the first one that's been on goal for a long time that didn't get blocked.
Carlos Rangel, another, I think, a new name in the trap, is saying it feels like a lot of goals have gone off of deflections this year. And I think that I would like to see a stat. Like, I would like to see somebody break that down. Get like all the goals that we've given up off deflections this year. It's, you know what's kind of a positive though, Dan, when you think about, I mean, having that many chances against a New England team, again, tops in the East, is, I think it's pretty positive, but then also it's nice moving forward. Again, we'll talk about the Heinz situation, but having that, I think what people are referring to in the trap is that new coach bump. The Hawks bounce is what Dean was calling it whenever they fired Lloyd Pierce, got Nate McMillan in. Is we're going into Cincinnati to play the second worst defense in all of MLS. Mm-hmm. And if we're going and we're creating chances with a really ragtag group against New England, and then you get that coach bounce, the players are probably a lot happier. You're probably going to get Joseph Martinez back into the lineup on Wednesday. You know, we're still without the 3 guys that are out for the Gold Cup right now. Nothing you could do about that. And we have some guys potentially returning from injury. that would be the absolute best case scenario, I think, for this team in terms of opponents to play in the current circumstances. I think it's, I mean, you saw, I think it was what, 5-4? They were up something like 2-0 against Cincinnati and
Montreal.
And next thing I look, it's 5-4 final. Montreal had won that game. You got to feel pretty good about a young team who's getting shots on goal going into Cincinnati and then putting a couple in the back of the net.
Yes. I mean, we can get more into this later, but it seems like Brenner's kind of finding a little bit of form. I know one of his goals, he got two goals on the weekend. One of his goals was just a stupid error from the goalkeeper. They passed it back to him and his first touch was too heavy. So Brenner just took it right off his foot and put it in the empty net. But remember Luciano Acosta? Well, he's been their best player and he has given Atlanta United fits every time we've played him, regardless of who the coach is.
You mean failed PSG signing? Transfer to PSG, Luciano Acosta, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's really good at MLS. And
yes, he is very good at MLS. Did he ever even end up over at PSG, or did that fall? I thought that broke down.
I think he ended up somewhere and then came back. I think he just came straight back to Cincinnati.
Where is Atlas? Oh, he went to Liga MX. He played there for a season, maybe a season and a half. He played 33 games for Atlas. And then he came back to Cincinnati and doing what he did at DC, because he was really good at DC. And
yeah, he was.
Yeah, he's just back at it. It's just one of those guys, like little diminutive figure like Maxi Morales or Sebastian Giovinco. Like, they're good players, but they're even better in MLS for some reason.
Yeah. So Mike Wisniewski.
Eric Lopez.
I'm sorry. I can't read, Matt. So I'm sorry. At least your name's not John F. Ford Barisi. Eric Lopez needs to step it up. Eric Lopez, he really irritated me over the weekend. I feel like he was just diving for the sake of it. He was not even close to getting the ball. He would just lose control when he'd be through on goal. He really does need to step it up. He's young, though. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt because he can. I mean, he's not like a Barco type signing that he should be burying every chance he gets for the expectations. But I feel like, yeah, he definitely needs to improve.
Go ahead. Sorry, Dan.
If we're gonna get any better.
Yeah, I was going to say Octavio Mingura said Eric Lopez proved that he's not ready for the first team. I don't know that I've seen a player as small and thin as he is, and not necessarily tall like a Peter Crouch, lumber the way that he lumbers whenever he runs. Like, he does not have, I feel like he doesn't have pace. And I tweeted this out. He reminds me a lot too, where he's kind of clunky. And I mean this with no disrespect to Tito Villalba, but he was kind of, I think Eric Quintana used to say he runs on railroad tracks, like super fast. But like, he doesn't have great lateral movement. He doesn't have that kind of agility. And I see that a lot in Eric Lopez, but without the speed that I saw with Tito. But I don't know. It's I don't know, man. It's tough. I think that he probably needs to see the bench, and we see somebody like Jackson Conway come in, or you move Chol up, bring in another midfielder once Santi Sosa's back, which may be Wednesday. I really liked what I saw out of Machop Chol. I think he's he's a very intimidating. I think we've talked about that with some of our old wingers. Like, if they're big, they're kind of intimidating. They're fast, and I mean he checks those boxes. I think that he's kind of a steal of a signing, or like a gem of a signing for this front office to pick him up. I think we had his rights, right? Like, he went off to Wake Forest.
He was a homegrown, wasn't he? Yeah. Was he? I may not have been. But yeah, we did, I think, have his rights. But I've been really pleased with what I've seen from him.
What do you think about Greg for the culture asking, what do y'all think of using two up top?
Well, we didn't really use two up top.
I think he's asking moving forward.
Oh, okay. Well, no, the point I was trying to make was we had Chol, who was more of a guy up top, and then we just had a, I don't know, like a little mini fridge, you know, one of those mini fridges that you could keep that were just, you know, we played with 10 men.
You talking about the magic chef that you throw in the you keep in your office, the little magic chef fridge? Has that little tiny freezer at the top that you'd be better off like just using a cooler instead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, has a little frost on it that I don't think does anything.
I think that's an app thing because it's called a fridge, but it doesn't actually work.
Yeah,
you know,
it doesn't work.
So it's like, sorry, but, just ragging on Kubo Torres.
Brian's back in the trap. It's been forever since I've seen him in here. Greg is asking about moving forward using two at the top, and Brittany S. is kind of championing that with Conway, or asking if he met with Conway and Joseph. And I think that is the pair that you have to put up there.
Yeah, I think Joseph is probably, I mean, he's always played, if we're playing two up top, he's going to be the one who's been further forward most of the time. But now we saw a little bit with Frank de Boer, and now more so with Heinze, he's coming back, but he's the one you want at the tip of the spear. So whether it's like a true two up top where we have him like sticking up there and pressing at the same time, and having only maybe one of them come back, I think they may line up. I think we'll probably line up in a 4-3-3, without using two at the top. But then it's like, well, then if Conway can't fit in at the wing and Joseph stays healthy, Conway's going to be that bench player. But yeah, I think we could use two up top. I think it's going to be kind of amorphous anyway, but I don't think it's going to be like a true two guys up top all the time. Ryan Kennedy, stay hydrated, boys. Absolutely.
We got the legend, former Atlanta United Twitter admin, I believe, Ryan Catanese. Stay hydrated. Got the got the spicy water on deck.
Yeah, the social media admin marketing's never been the same since.
Dude, it's true. And I feel really bad. I think I said this the other night, but like I feel really bad for those admins because the abuse that they were taking was so unnecessary, and like to be in that position, I don't know, I guess it's what like companies like Delta deal with all day, where they just have somebody that's there to respond to so many different complaints, to people trying to get free shit. Let's call it what it is. People complaining on Twitter to brands, it's really just to get free shit from them, right? Like there's no other reason. I mean,
So I think Carlos Rangel saying, I think we'll see the return of the 3-5-2. I mean, we could.
I love that 3-5-2.
So Rob was saying that Rob Valentino was saying that he probably wasn't going to change much against Cincinnati because it's such a short turnaround. So I imagine he's going to stay with, you know, that 4-3-3. But then potentially as we move forward, absolutely, I could see us playing three at the back way more often. And hopefully seeing Sosa being pushed up and not having being that guy that goes back into that center back role, because I think he could be more of a dynamic guy pushed up into the midfield along with, you know, maybe Sadich.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And then Carlos Rangel? No, it was Mateo saying we need Miles back to make that back three work. I'm just going to say this, like Miles Robinson needs to be starting with John Brooks in the next World Cup. Like, I think he's proving to be our best. Granted, he's on a thin squad right now in Gold Cup. You know, everybody's either on holiday, whatever, or, you know, playing in MLS or what have you. I guess maybe not the MLS players, but everybody ramping up for preseason in Europe and all that. But
well, it's getting past Zimmerman, isn't it?
Yeah, which I don't know. I honestly think they're kind of neck and neck. I don't want to take anything away from Walker Zimmerman because I think he's a great center back, but he's at least the number three on the depth chart for Greg Berhalter, in my opinion. I saw Alexi Lawless I'm trying to remember the way he put it. He had Aaron Long in the top five of the depth chart for center back, but not Miles Robinson.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
which I think is a little unfair because Miles Robinson is fantastic, as he was showing yesterday in bodying the Canadian team. But
Yeah. Brittany S., your thoughts about Adam Franco? I thought it was a promising performance. I really did. I think him, Walks, and Campbell played that back three pretty well, apart from letting up that goal. But it was a promising start. I feel like the more he plays, he's going to get better, just like Joseph. Yeah, I think it was much better to see him in that game. Though there was a couple of mistakes, but there was a couple of real good takeaways and attacks that he broke down by himself on the wing. So that was, it was good to see. Positive.
That's what's good. Again, we're talking about a game where we didn't necessarily feel like we didn't put a goal into the back of the net. We lost. We lost to the best team in the East. Again, I'll say that probably tell him blue in the face, but like it was the match. It was after that match when Heinze got let go, which is so weird to me because it wasn't a bad match and we were going up against a great team. So it's very weird. Yeah, you're right. So Greg, just to go back to that Alexi Lalas chart, but it was John Brooks, Walker Zimmerman, Mark McKenzie, Aaron Long, and then the fifth. Oh shit, I already forgot who the fifth is.
Yeah, anyway, that wasn't Miles Robertson.
No, it wasn't Miles. Miles was not his number five. But yeah, I mean, maybe Greg's right. He needs to go off to Europe this winter to go ply his trade there. But and maybe that's the only reason Mark McKenzie maybe is in front of him too. Not to say Mark McKenzie's a great defender. He was really good in Philly. And then I guess he's doing well. It was Miazga. That's right. Thank you, Brittany.
Oh, Matt Miazga.
Yeah, it was Miazga. That's who it was. It was either. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That guy, then, right?
Yeah. And then we have Chris Richards over in Bayern Munich too. So it's, maybe it was a top six depth chart. I don't know. It's
six,
weird.
Seven. Sure.
Yeah. Whatever. It's six or seven. Anyway, back to the match. I mean, yeah, Alan Franco, I was pleasantly surprised with his, I didn't see him make any glaring mistakes, which I know sounds a little patronizing, but I feel like you could point to mistakes and then missed assignments and that sort of thing, especially in a man-marking system that he had in the matches that he played prior. And I don't think he really stood out in that way. He kind of flew under the radar in a lot of ways for me, which I think is usually indicative of a decent performance by a center back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, Thought Marco, we can hear you. Well,
yeah, we can see you. He's watching on Twitter. Yeah, we're broadcasting
on Periscope.
Yeah, we're broadcasting on YouTube, Periscope, and Twitch right now.
Yeah, Alan Franco looked way better than usual. That's what I said.
And that's very positive because I felt like George Campbell looked very comfortable out there too.
George Campbell got a 7.9 rating. He was rated our best player.
He was very good. How old is George Campbell now? Is he 20?
George Campbell is 20.
Yeah, I think he just turned 20 last month. So
he had an 84% pass success, 5 dribbles. He won 4 aerials, 3 tackles. He had good clearances. He got 5. Oh, that's not his. He didn't get 5 saves. Knighton got 5 saves. yeah, George Campbell played great. I didn't realize he was rated. He got rated so high. I'm just looking on who scored.
He looks very comfortable, and I love. Like he has a big fucking body too. Like he is.
Yeah, he does.
I feel like he's a very imposing center back, and I love that. And then I also think that makes me feel when you take into account George Campbell, Anton Walks, who's to me is the future captain of this
Anton.
Team. Has to
I love
be,
him,
right?
Man.
Between those two, Alan Franco, you bring Miles Robinson back. And then you take into account, I think Bryce Washington, I believe, is playing center back for the twos right now. And then Josh Bauer, our number one draft pick this year, I believe, is also a center back. You have to feel not so bad considering the depth that Miles Robinson might get shipped off to Europe. And it might be it's a win for Miles Robinson, I think, if he gets sold off to a bigger team, say in Germany. And then I don't know. We have depth and I feel good about it. And in a pinch, you have defensive midfielders like Santi Sosa and Franco Ibarra, who could probably, like, in a injury ravaged season, which is ironic because they're both injured, but to have them come back and play one of those positions, I don't feel so bad. Like, I would have, at the beginning of the season, I would have told you I would be in dread if we sold off Miles Robinson, but I don't necessarily feel as bad about that situation.
No, I don't feel bad as bad about it as either. But I mean, it's kind of one performance. It's a promising performance in that we lost the game, but it was against one of the best, I would argue the second best team in the league. And it was only 1-0 and it was a real crappy goal. So, you know, there's that.
Oh, I feel like,
but yeah, Elliot Beaven, maybe Bello and Miles leaving this year. Someone else in the trap saying, right. We've seen some rumors for Bello getting sold. We've seen previously Galatasaray, and then there was another team.
Olympiacos.
Who I saw. Olympiacos, yeah.
Yeah, that's solid teams.
Yeah, so it would be interesting to see how George does over there. And then someone else in the trap, I apologize, I can't remember who it was, but they're saying, I haven't seen any rumors for Miles leaving, and that's true. I haven't seen any rumors for Miles leaving, but then we can see.
Yeah, but things happen so quickly. And then to Carlos Rangel's point, Carlos Rangel saying Sosa's not injured. I'm sorry, you're right. He's suspended on yellow card accumulation. I have a lot of trouble right now keeping up with who's injured, who's suspended, who's being held, who's being held out of the who's being held out of the squad. At the whim of the manager. It's hard to keep track of, especially whenever the team's not being transparent about things.
Yeah, and, go ahead, Tim.
No, I was just going to say MLS is so hard to keep track of injury news too. I feel like compared to other leagues as well. It's kind of hard to follow that.
Yeah. That's a good point from Brian. Feel like every season until this season, we talked about how thin we are at center back depth. We only had Parkhurst and LGP for a little while there. It's great that we've got all that. We've got a good core of depth, like that CDM, CB depth, which is great. So that's good right now. So knock on wood that we can build on that with whoever we bring in.
Yeah. Which, man, it's...
How Andy Carroll is available on a free. you get what you pay for.
Oh, my gosh. Is it January? Like, can we overpay for him in January?
Just like Liverpool did?
Yeah, can we make him can we make him at the time the most expensive English transfer in history? Only to have him come in and just absolutely shit the bed. What is the British phrase for shitting the bed, Dan?
Shit the bed.
Oh, okay.
Say that a lot, yeah.
Okay.
For the culture, the back half of the 11 is in decent shape. We absolutely. But it's like, well, there's some Brittany S mentioned last week, Santiago Munoz. Oh shit, the lawyer's here.
I heard there's a managing position open at Man United. Like, throw my hat into the ring.
Oh, good boy.
To see you boys.
Yeah, welcome aboard again, Kevin.
Well, we've gone through the last game, Kev, and that's as far as we've got. We've touched a little bit on Cincinnati. We've been talking a little bit about some rumors and how we were happy with the performances of Alan Franco and Sadic.
What are you guys talking about the game for?
We were waiting to get you in here. We were taking a water break and getting you in before we started.
It must be nice.
Not only was he not giving them water, they were taking hydroxycut.
Same.
To get in shape for summer.
That's why I've been doing 2-a-days, Dan. I figured I'd get ready since the roster was getting a little depleted, I'd get my body ready. So
I think we're ready to talk about the news.
If I turn this, does this still work? I just want to be the same orientation as you guys.
Oh no.
Whoa. Now you're gonna it's like a Bourne movie. I'm getting nauseous.
Just wait, I'm gonna get a phone book out, start.
You're talking about a guy who had to go lay down after playing Tomb Raider after 15 minutes because it was way too shaky. Like I can't.
I didn't have time to get my computer set up and all that. So there we go. Okay, we're on the same page here.
Dean is asking what hydroxycut is. Hydroxycut is that thing that they play in midday It's like a midday commercial. It's a pill that just makes you pee out all your water, and then you get ripped and you look really attractive, like they do in the daytime commercials with Frank Thomas. Frank Thomas is in the what is the other one called? Some testosterone replacement. Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, dude, so Gabriel Heinze gets let go yesterday. I knew about it. I couldn't tell you guys how I knew about it, but all I could tell you is I knew about it.
Yeah, but I knew about it before you, Tim, and I just didn't want to say anything.
Yeah, I wanted to make the rounds and you guys.
So I'll confirm my source, which is probably the same source, also said the same thing. So I know that you know, because I knew probably from the same guy.
I'm telling you guys that I knew, though. I'm telling you guys that I knew. Oh, my gosh. That whole thing. If Percy, if you're watching, you have been a constant source of just delight on Twitter the past few days. Gabriel Heinze was relieved of his duties. It was not a mutual parting of ways, like with Frank DeBoer, as it was laid out in the departure emails or the departure materials. But it's, he's gone. He gone. El Gringo gano.
You talk about the materials we've gotten. How ill-timed has that been every single time? It's like, Joseph isn't starting. By the way, season ticket renewals are coming out today. Would you like to re-up for next season?
Side note, does anybody have any projections on whether or not there's even going to be a waiting list next year for season tickets, the way that crowd looked on Sunday or Saturday?
Not a chance, man. Yeah. Not a chance. But they're going to still rack up the numbers because of tickets sold versus people in the building, because there's no way there was 42,000 people in the building this weekend based on what it looked like on TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting point. We obviously aren't in the back room. We're not in the clubhouse, whatever. We're not seeing the inner workings and like the series of events that actually transpired. Carlos Rangel brings up a point. He said it felt like he was fired after the game because he took so long to address the media. And I think that was one of the things to go to the press conference. And if you guys want like a more in-depth, we're not here to tell you about everything that happened in the press conference. Leave that to the press. Like Jason and Mike did a great job on Off the Woodwork talking about that yesterday. But one of the things was media availability and that cultural, that aspect to the culture definitely seemed to like be a big part in why he was let go. And Carlos is probably not wrong in kind of addressing that.
Yeah. The cultural fit. I mean, I listened to Doug Robeson did a podcast today, and he just let out all his feelings that have been boiling up under the surface that he did not like Heinze at all.
Which, you remember, everybody gave him shit for that, right? You remember, he got a lot of shit for complaining about media availability, I think, whenever Heinze first got it. Continue, yeah. Dan, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I don't think he called him an asshole, but he said he's not a nice guy. And he was a nice guy to the players, but other than that, he wasn't a very nice guy to anyone, apparently. And then the news comes out of, you know, holding water from the players. And then I think it was, I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but someone was saying in Velez, if his players came in, if they gained weight, they would get fined. And I understand. And part of me, like before all this, was like, well, you know, intense training sessions. I mean, you're a professional athlete. You should be able to do this.
And how much were we talking about that when Tata was doing the exact same thing?
Right, exactly. And then Doug in his latest podcast was saying, well, there is talk that Heinze actually violated his contract by not providing these things and playing this way. So it's if you're going against your contract, I mean, I don't know. I think Brian in the trap was saying we're still paying him potentially, but if you violated your contract, I feel like it's null and void and you're not getting anything out of it.
Ah, the old Auburn football coaching carousel. I love it. I love it. You hire somebody, you fire somebody, you pay them for 6 years until you get three more in line.
No, I think it's very much more so the, at least I hope it's not this way. I was going to say the Bobby Bonilla New York Mets, they're still paying Bobby Bonilla for a contract he signed in like the early 90s, right? Something like that.
95.
Maybe it was mid 90s, something like that. Every year you'll see it trending on Twitter, Bobby Bonilla days, whenever the Mets have to pay they have to ship him off, do a direct deposit of his contract for that year. Yeah, it's interesting, Dan, right? Like I think he probably did violate his contract.
You would think that the players, whatever, what's it called? Like, what's the acronym? Like NAPSL or whatever it is, like whatever the players.
MLBPA or MLSPA, yeah. The Major League Soccer.
You would
soccer,
think that
yeah.
has to be a part of any coaching agreement, that they have to adhere to that, right? Like, how could they go against what the players association bylaws are or whatever? You know, that's the whole reason why you have them. It'd be like working a union job for an employer that's going to say, no, fuck you. You're going to do whatever I require you to do. You know, that's the whole reason why those things are in place. So,
yeah, it made sense that he would have a clause in his contract saying you have to adhere to the MLSPA, CBA, and, you know, you can't.
And I'm sure he got it and was just like, fuck this. I'm doing it my way.
I mean, probably maybe had that old school mentality, you know. I mean, he's done so much in his playing career and the clubs that he's played for. I mean, you wonder, like, if he had got, because he's got so high, did he have to adhere to those same strict rules? I mean, you hear about Cristiano Ronaldo stays like 10 pounds under his recommended weight just so he can be a little faster as he gets older. But you hear about crazy diets that athletes do, you know, especially with wrestlers having to cut weight and everything, that, you know, just to get that competitive edge, and being a lighter soccer player makes you faster. And then if you know, I was thinking when I heard about the water, I was thinking, well, you know, the Marines, when Easy Company in Band of Brothers were getting trained, they would go on like 10-mile runs and not be able to drink from their canteen because it just makes you stronger, right?
Was it required for you to watch that series to get your this is such a random
one of the
reference
best,
for you.
That's one of the best seasons, best programs ever made. But I'm a big war movie guy. So if you've got these things in place, you know, it's the same as like hiring children into the labor force. It's illegal.
Exactly.
I think that's what it ultimately comes down to, right? Because I don't think the stuff that he was doing on the surface is necessarily unheard of, right? In a lot of ways, like we were talking about, like Tata got praised. I think he got praised and I think he got demonized. I've seen both, like where people are dredging up their tweets from 4 years ago. Or whatever it was, kind of either applauding or, I guess, demonizing. I'll use that word again, Tata, for his harsh training or his overtraining, and his, you know, the Bobby Boswell thread that's like 30 tweets long that's talking about that. But like that stuff's not unheard of. It's not unheard of to, from what I understand, for teams to fine players for being overweight. It sounds like the frequency at which he was doing it was. At least
so
in Argentina, wherever he's at.
Here,
no, not, just, not that.
I don't know,
that,
yeah.
So that brings up a bigger point, which we'll talk about. But like that happened at Velez. It has not been uncovered here. I don't think it happened here. But I'm just saying, like, it seems like he was doing these hard ass coach things, but even to a bigger extreme than the hard ass coaches are doing. And I don't know that it necessarily, and I don't know if it's like a old relative mindset from whenever he was a player and being an old curmudgeon who was a fantastic player. And he's like, oh, well, back in my day, two both ways uphill in the snow, like misremembering how and thinking these kids are soft these days. But sports science exists, right? Like, and that's another callback to like whenever he was talking about sports scientist and sports statistics and all that not really mattering. It ultimately, I think, it just comes down. He was a tyrant, right? Like, and that's not going to be accepted. It is crazy. It happens so quickly.
I mean, it's gotta be within reason though, right? Like, I feel like my biggest issue throughout this entire tenure under Heinze, everything that happened with Felipe's article about the front office and Carlos Bocanegra and the history with all of that, is how shrouded the entire organization is from legitimate transparency to the fan base and the public. Because I don't know how much of like what we're hearing coming second and third hand, how severe it is, how widespread it was, like, deny, like, okay, so he was running two-a-days. How long was he running two-a-days? Was it happening in the all the references I saw to it was during preseason. Okay, well, that seems to make sense. You're coming off of a long delay. You want to get players acclimated and conditioned pretty quickly. You do two-a-day splits so that happens, and then you taper off from that. I don't know. I just don't know.
No, it was in July. It was during the international break.
That's what it was. That's when it was. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, same thing with like the water stuff. Like, was that happening every single day? I just don't. I'm not saying that what he did was right, because I definitely don't agree with all of that. But I think that there's a bigger story going on here that we're never going to get all the answers to. And ultimately, all it does is leave Atlanta United as a team in a lessened position going forward in getting a new manager at this rate. Like, I feel like, I don't know, man. I just don't know what way to look. Like, was it all just the conditioning stuff? Because certainly the front office knew about all of that. It's not like they didn't. I mean, as involved as Carlos Bocanegra has been going to training sessions and everything else that we've heard about from Felipe's articles, like, no way he didn't know that kind of stuff was happening. But all of a sudden results aren't happening. Then all the Joseph stuff happens. Like, it's just, there's so many different levels to this thing that I don't know that we're ever going to get a clear and total picture of what was really going on.
Yeah. I think there's an element of that. I'm hoping at some point, you know, probably a year or so in the future, we may hear more of like that behind the scenes of what was actually going on. I'm kind of interested to hear Heinze's next interview with, like, if he gets interviewed with someone in South America, to see what he says about this whole thing. Be interested to hear what his perspective was. But it's, I mean, there must have been so many, for them to like pull the switch so quickly, it seems as though there must have been many things that are going on, or the players and the staff were just so unhappy that it was just, there wasn't a chance of getting it resolved.
I think so. I want to dispel something that I'm sorry, guys, you fans, you 17s, I love you to death. I don't think you were the reason. I don't think the fans were at all the reason that this happened. I think there is a combination of, I think Joseph Martinez was the flashlight that shone a light onto what was going on in the front office, who probably, like you're saying, Kevin, knew what was going on, knew about the violations or the complaints that were given MLSPA. I think they have to save face at that point, because I think a lot of questions are being asked, given the amount of media around the team, the amount of just availability. I mean, the availability is like scant compared to the rest of the MLS teams, but like, just the amount of investigative reporting that was going on. Like, at some point you have to say, oh shit, don't dig any deeper. We'll get rid of this guy. Because a lot of it doesn't make sense, to be honest. I mean, the guys in Argentina that are coming out, I can't remember the reporter's name off the top of my head, who's talking about how it was well known that he would find players and weigh them pretty frequently and find them. Like, that stuff that, on a vetting period that I think people said was between 5 and 7 months. I don't know if there was a designated exact time frame that they vetted Gabriel Heinze, but you would think that stuff would have surfaced, right?
Well, especially just like any other job, you have references, right? Like for a manager, you would expect to talk to former players, former, you know, former teammates, former front offices that had to deal with him, all of that across the board to get a feel for that. And as long as it took to get him assigned as a manager, to your point, Tim, there's no way that stuff didn't come up. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. I think it's the right call. Ultimately, just like I felt like the Frank DeBoer decision was the right call based on the way that it was spun by the front office. But I just have such a weird feeling about this team and the state of this team and the way it's being managed by the front office right now that regardless of how I feel about it being the quote unquote right decision, it's based on the understanding that the reasoning that we've been all given as fans is not completely transparent and in is some way some relief of responsibility by this front office in some regard, you know, and there's still faults in that logic one way or another, right? Like who's deciding who the manager is now? Like, is it the front office? Is it the players? Is it, you know, how is this happening? And Tim, I agree. Like what Joseph did in shining a light on the Heinze situation absolutely needed to happen. But isn't that also the front office? Like, isn't there supposed to be checks and balances? Like, shouldn't there be some sort of protocol in place for those things to be remedied without a full dismissal of a manager? Like, I just don't get it. It just sets this weird precedent for me where I don't know that any manager is going to come in here with any confidence that they're going to be able to run this club without stepping on toes, getting someone upset, losing the locker room, trying to manage, trying not to overcoach. And again, all of this is with saying that like what Heinze was doing was definitely overcoaching these players and overtraining these players. And ultimately what I think led to a lot of the injuries that this team was plagued with. But there's this whole thing is just a murky fucking mess right now. And I don't know how this team recovers from it going forward. And they've got to. I don't know what they're going to do though.
It's going to be, I don't think it's impossible. Like I feel like the next coach that comes in could take a real bump from what's happened in the past. Like I know Rob Valentino is the interim right now and he's should get a bump because apparently he's well liked by all the players. But I mean, the next guy could come in and like really help everyone like move through the negativity and the relationships that can happen. Like, I feel like there's a good opportunity for like a really good man manager to be able to come in and smooth out things between the players, the front office, and at least be that connectivity through it all. So that, yeah, that now there is, people are aware that there is that situation at the club, but it could be a real boost and it could potentially get someone in there as the manager who we think is not a good fit, but actually helps. Like Alex Ferguson wasn't the biggest tactical genius, but he was such a good man manager and kept the players happy, was like a father figure to them and became incredibly successful. So I think there's potential for someone like that to bring in. It's just going to be, they can't bring in another authoritarian figure to just ram home what they want to do all the time. So like, I don't know if let's say Bielsa comes in, that's probably not going to be a good fit based on the fragility of the mental state and relationships that are currently there.
No, I agree. And I tend to agree with Scott McMillan. As much as I love Darren Eales and what he's brought to this team, he has to bear some of the brunt of the responsibility here that it's, I don't know that the Frank DeBoer hiring necessarily was a failure. I know that that's probably up for debate. It's probably never going to be settled. But to see what happened with Heinze, to see some of the signings that have happened, and it just, it's never going to be good for the front office to have to let two guys go in a matter of whatever it was, 12 months, that the two guys were let go. Yeah, it seems like there needs to be... Scott McMillan says, for those of you who are listening and not watching, it says it seems there needs to be a restart as if this is a new franchise, new front office, new manager. And to Kevin, your point, I think if I'm a prospective manager, if I'm sitting over there, I threw this name out there earlier because I would love for him to come, but I don't think he's... Yeah, probably. He's got his eyes on the Barcelona job whenever Koeman gets fired. But no, Eddie Howe. Like Eddie Howe from Bournemouth... not with Bournemouth anymore, but if he's looking at this team, he has to think, I need to have a different structure above me than what the last two managers have had. Because it, even if what has happened to Heinze was completely all of his own doing, and it's just repercussions of the way he was managing, another person from an outside perspective is still going to say, yeah, but there's two managers that have been gone in the course. You guys have had two managers in 3 years. In a way, two managers in 2 years. You guys let go of a guy in the middle of a pandemic or after a pandemic laden season. I think you do have to kind of clean house and start fresh in that way. I mean, we have the cachet of being, you know, the highest attended stadium in MLS throughout the entire season. We have trophies in our cabinet only being 5 years into not even 5 years into MLS. Like, we're going to be able to attract players still. I think we're still going to be able to attract managers, but I think we got to do something to fix that. I mean, I think it was, I don't know that I got the response, but I believe Paul Tenorio from The Athletic asked Darren Eales, why do they feel like they're entitled to be in charge of the managerial mm-hmm. search? And I think that is a fantastic question to ask.
I think
what was the answer?
What's that?
What was the answer?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think I saw the answer in the press conference, but that's the perfect answer. Like, I think that is a prop question to ask, because you fail twice in a row like that. It's going to be hard. I mean, I do love that Doug came out yesterday and immediately said, knowing a source close to Frank DeBoer, there's one coach that already has his hat in the ring and he would be willing to come back. Could you imagine?
There's no fucking way that would happen. Well, I mean, my point is, like, just as much as clearly this front office is not, they're what, 1-for-3 at this point on their hits. That's not really great odds. And now we're going into our fourth signing, but it gets into this who watches the Watchmen territory at some point. Like, I want somebody during one of these press conferences to be like, what does the ownership, aside from the front office, start to, like, who's putting Darren and Boca in check at a certain point? Like, somebody's got to be checking the people making these decisions. And right now it's like, our signings aren't really producing much. Our managers aren't producing much. Like, as much as we've all sat here and said, like, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and don't get rid of the whole front office just because of the misfortune of a manager or a couple of players, like, you're getting to the point now where this entire thing can get too far out of reach really, really quickly over the next 1 to 2 years, to where you start losing a fan base, you start losing a culture, you start losing an identity, and then you've lost a team. Like, that's a slippery, slippery slope, right? Like, this team is not producing results right now. There's talent on the field, but it's in bits and pieces, right? Like, it's not the team of 2018 or even 2019 for that matter. You know, one of the thoughts I had the other day is, like, aside from Joseph, maybe Lennon, maybe Sosa this year, but it's like, there's nobody, this team doesn't really have the kit appeal that I think it did 2 years ago, which is another just silly thing. Like, there's not a roster full of players where people are running out to get their names on the back of a kit. You know, there's a lack of that. There's a lack of a manager that's inspiring new players to come and want to be a part of that. Like, the stadium looks empty this past weekend. Again, I don't want to sit here and say the sky is falling, but at the same time, I just want to say that, like, this, there's a lot of pressure on this front office, and we heard it all this time of, like, we got to get this signing right. Well, they didn't, and they vetted it for 7 fucking months. Like, and Tim, to your point, you're saying that these things that are well known in their past tenures is all of a sudden just not being brought up, or it is being brought up and it is allowed to take place, but then all of a sudden, you know, a couple of things take place and they're that's being held against them. So it's almost like this rap sheet that they just keep in their back pocket. You know, I don't get it, man. I really don't.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, obviously Darren and Carlos are going to be given this opportunity to fix it. I feel like when Heinzer was hired, I was really excited. I thought he was the guy to bring in. But I think there's, you know, to the point about the drama that can be there, you know, if you're a savvy contract negotiator when you're the new manager who's coming in, you've got to be say, hey, I've heard these things. I've talked to these people. I've heard there may be issues. So why don't you give me some financial assertions that, you know, or some financial obligations that we can meet. And if we feel like these are being breached, then you're going to have to pay me X amount of dollars because I want X control of roster spots, X amount of input into scouting of new players and things like that. So I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for somebody to come in here and you know, chaos is a ladder.
So you're saying you want Jurgen Klinsmann to come in, right? Is that's what you're saying? You want a manager who comes in and commands a lot of money, commands a lot of responsibility, wants to take over all the personnel decisions. Bring him in. Bring in Klinsmann. I think he's probably just surfing off of Long Beach right now or wherever he is, Huntington Beach or Southern California. But
so when it comes to talking about who fills the role, I'm admittedly way out of my depth as far as candidates and who may be a potential
Dabo.
Fit, but well, it's interesting that you say that, not Dabo specifically, but there's been a lot of talk about Ted Lasso online. And I say that to say the similarities in Ted Lasso and Dabo and Nick Saban, who somebody mentioned in the trap, which is coaches that inherently create a culture and a foundation within a team, whether no matter the sport, that inspires players to play for them, whether that's an aggressive tactic like what Heinzer was trying to do, which ultimately was too aggressive and the players weren't bought into that because it wasn't producing results. Also, to the point in the trap, like if you're going to coach like Nick Saban, you better win like Nick Saban, right? Like if you're going to run a fucking program like that, it better produce results, which that definitely was not happening. But my question was, when you're looking at a new manager with everything that Atlanta's faced, you've brought in three different style of manager from arguably two regions. You've got South American coaches, and then you've got a European coach. One thing that this team hasn't done that's come up on Twitter is, does this team look for a coach that has MLS experience? And what are you guys' thoughts on that? Because that's something that this team hasn't pursued so far in any of its three managerial positions, is somebody that has MLS experience, not just with player salary caps and the way the league is run, but also with that player association regulation and guidelines. You know, do you think that's a valuable path to take for the team?
Yeah, I think it is valuable. The thing is, the coaches with MLS experience that are available right now are not, you know, it's people
Damn
like
it,
so there's Jason Kreiss, Chris Armas, Mike Petke, but then you know, a name that's been floated out by a number of people is Dome Tarrant, who left NYCFC because one of the reasons was he was frustrated with the whole MLS setup. So from what I've heard, he would be a great fit, but if he's already left the job because he doesn't like all the rules and the cap, then he's probably not going to want to come to Atlanta and deal with all of that. Anyway, but I mean, he would be, I've heard he's great trying to build up the youth academies. He's a good, you know, aggressive tactical manager. It's just that can he deal with everything else that's now going with it? And also, you know, he's going to have a lot of pressure on him because Darren and Boca should have a lot of pressure on them. I mean, if this next hiring fails,
oh yeah,
that's, I mean, surely that's going to be, it should be Arthur looking at them and saying, okay, what are the replacements now? I mean, he should be looking at who would be replacing them anyway right now, I feel like. Yeah. You know, you've got to have a list of candidates, if I would imagine. That's what I'd be doing.
I was going to say, who goes first out of those two, Carlos and Darren?
Oh, it's got to be Carlos, right? Carlos has got to be the fall guy, even if it's all Darren's doing. Like, he's Carlos's boss, and he's going to, you know, personnel decisions. I mean, honestly, and Greg brought up a good point. He's like, what is Demetrios's position in all of this? Because I haven't seen anything from him, him coming in being a new head of player personnel. But yeah, it's got to be Carlos, right? And from what I understand, maybe his contract is out at the end of the year too. So maybe they just kind of let him ride off into the sunset.
I didn't realize his contract was up at the end of the year.
I may be wrong. I saw that being floated around. Does anybody know how, to Brian's point, he said, El Piojo Super Saiyan.gif. Do we know how Piojo's doing at Tigres? Like, are they? I have not been following Liga MX, and I had to even find that he's managing Tigres right now, but I would take Piojo in a fucking heartbeat. Could you imagine him at Mercedes-Benz? No. Oh my gosh. Oh, I would take that in a heartbeat. Yeah, I don't know, man. In terms of the American managers that are available, I know people like kind of scoff at the Jason Christ thing. He might be the best American MLS savvy manager that's available at the moment. You know, there was a point in time, I think, where he was, you know, a sought after manager. So, okay, I guess Demetrios doesn't get in until August. He's not taking over Carlos's duties until August 1st.
One thing's for sure, next year on the vault, we will have a separate question, which will be, will the manager make it through his first year? Because that's a new game we're going to have to play every season. What's the over under on the tenure for the new acting manager?
It's kind of crazy, man. It is. It's crazy. But at the same time, so I feel like, and I think I've seen people, I think Carl Seggy said, you know, like, we should never, it's dangerous to pander to a player. And I think that's true in any sport, any club. You know, I likened it, like, it might have been a situation almost like, I've been watching too much Formula One, the Drive to Survive stuff. But like, when you have a player like, or like a driver like Fernando Alonso, who's calling the shots for management. And I think people accuse LeBron James of doing this and imploding some teams, but I don't think it's ever a good thing. I don't think Joseph's doing that. And kind of the events that have followed, I feel like he was I think he was more speaking up for his team. And it definitely was a pissing contest, it seemed like, at first, but now it does seem like he was kind of sticking up and trying to shine a light on what was going on. Shit, I just completely lost that train of thought. But
inmates running the asylum.
Yeah, inmates running the asylum.
How much do you allow players to make the decisions for the team?
I think zero. I think you have to say zero, right? You have to say the players don't really have a say outside of their play style in what the front office does to fill the managing vacancy.
Yeah. I think, if you've got someone... I don't know. I say if you've got someone that's in Joseph's position, you know, he's been a galvanizing force within the city. He obviously has a big circle of influencers. I don't see why he couldn't be someone who would be a member of the interview board or something like that. I mean, you know, ultimately the decision's going to come down to Eels and Boca. Well, ultimately Eels, but there's definitely a way you could involve Joseph and say, you know, give us what's your take on it. You know, I mean, you don't have to take his opinion, but just to have him feel like he's being heard.
I think it should just be I don't even think it should be just Joseph, man. I mean, if anything, what the past two seasons have taught me is how valuable the locker room is, right? Whether it's one player or multiple players. And again, we don't know what that process is like for their evaluation of potential managers, but I would really hope that the front office includes the entire roster in the interview process for a new manager, whoever that may be, where they conduct their own interviews and their own discussions with managerial candidates. I don't know why the players aren't involved in a separate set of those interviews and presentations that the manager comes and gives to the entire team so that the team can weigh in on that decision-making process. Maybe that does take place. I don't know. Again, we just aren't privy to that. But if somehow this voice gets amplified from this show to urging the front office to do anything, it would be that somehow the players have to be it's become so evident over the past couple of years how important that is. Like, you've got to find a way to include them as a voice and deciding factor in the organization if you're going to use their voice as a deciding factor on the back end of it. Like, it can't just be after the fact. That's not how you're going to build success at the beginning, you know?
Yeah, I think you could just take, you know, because I think, you know, when you're bringing in someone as a manager who is going to be a higher up into a business, you'll at least take, you have the people who have the ear and temperature of kind of like the general staff. So you can bring them in and just see, you know, let them have a conversation with them. But I don't know, you know, do you get him to talk to Eric Lopez? I don't know how.
Not individually. I mean, like, as a locker room, like it's like a user group meeting, Dan. Like, you got to go present to everybody that's going to be using the space and make sure that you're not overlooking something that may only be important to one or two players, but makes or breaks the entire midfield as a result of it. And potentially the locker room, because the engine isn't going, you know, whatever it may be. I don't, you know, I'm just thinking about it from that standpoint. I'm not saying that the manager needs to meet with each player individually, but I think that it would be a valuable exercise if a manager was actually presenting to the team and getting questions and feedback from the team on a multiple candidate level, so that's evaluation. Like, that's part of that evaluation process. That's just,
yes. Definitely a bunch of levels you want to go through. I mean, you got to get the water pressure right?
Get the water pressure fixed.
Or get water at all. Like, do they have a well at Choa? They go in and pumping. No, I guess that's a good point. But one of the balancing acts that you have to play there too is like MLS, just the amount of turnover, sheer turnover, that how much do you like invest in certain players' opinions during these interviews? And I don't know, the dynamics of the league in general. It's tough. Like, Dan, let's get back to like managerial candidates. Give me one realistic, or your realistic replacement that you want to see, and give me like one like dream appointment out of available managers.
So I think a realistic one, I think, could be Dome Turan. I think he's a pretty good shout. Pie in the sky. I mean, I wanted Marcelo Gallardo, you know, when they fired Frank de Boer. Apparently his contract's ending at the end of the year, so maybe there's a way you can get him in. I mean, there's a lot of talk that like you want the next hire to be a very quick hire. You don't want it to drag out to the end of the season, otherwise this season could be, you know, completely in the toilet already. Marcelo Gallardo would be just awesome. I mean, he's built Rivers Academy. You will give chances to young players once, you know, attacking flair soccer. I mean, he's managed a lot of personalities with big egos. I mean, he's probably not going to come here. He's probably going to go to Europe or something like that. If he wants to move on from River, people are assuming that he does want to move on, especially now they've got all these financial issues. But he would be a great manager, I think, for Atlanta United. But Dome Turan, I feel like that's the thing. Like, guys with MLS experience, I mean, this is just me, and it's not very exciting. It's like, yes, I want us to win. Yes, I want us to win bad. I want us to play attractive, fast, soccer.
No, he would be.
I want us to dominate teams, but
4-3 as long as it's exciting. Got it.
No, that's the thing, Kevin. Train. I don't want us to win 4-3. I want us to win 4-0. I want domination. We dominate so bad that it gets boring because we win the trophy so many times. I want championships.
So you're saying you want a manager to come in and play total football? I think there's a manager out there right now who is available, who employs a style called total football, Dan. And I think you would like the way that he manages. I think we should bring him in for an interview.
Yeah. I mean, he was successful. Frank DeBoer was successful here. It was just, I mean, it wasn't the same Atlanta United as we watched winning the trophy in the first 2 years. It was not as exciting.
You're right.
It was successful.
They won multiple trophies, not just one.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I surprisingly saw people coming to his defense whenever they were talking about year-over-year turnover and how he didn't have Tito, he didn't have Gressel, and he didn't have
Nagby
in his second season. It's like he was one worldy from whatever his name, Alex De Leon, from
and
going to
PK.
And a missed PK from a sure bet at the penalty spot. But Kevin, do you have anybody in mind that you know?
No, I already told you I don't know this shit. I have no idea.
Okay, so I'm with you. I think the Domé Turant thing. I don't know a ton about him, but knowing that he's been Pep's number two in multiple places, that he did he win Supporters Shield with NYCFC? He did, right?
No, he didn't win Supporters Shield.
Was he close to Supporters Shield?
He was.
Was that the year that Red Bulls won it?
That sounds right, because he was there in 18 and 19. He was there two seasons, I think, with
I think it was the year
NYCFC.
That Red Bulls won it.
Because Philly was 20, Red Bulls was 19. And then who was in 18? Or maybe they were 18. No, Toronto maybe was 18. Anyway, I like that idea. I like that idea of Domé Turant. But there was a name that Mike and Jason brought up yesterday that had me thinking, for obvious reasons, near and dear to my heart. But I also think, if people thought the whole sexiness from Frank DeBoer kind of was a distraction, I have a feeling this guy would be a much bigger distraction. He's available. I mean, can you imagine?
No.
Can you imagine? This is my pie in the sky, is Andrea Pirlo coming in and managing.
Oh, wow.
Man, can you just imagine? No Pirlo, no party. I'd get to wear that shirt to games.
How did he do in Juve?
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't care. Bring him in. I don't fucking care. I named my dog after the man. Bring him in.
Oh, yeah, because he's an incredible player. I mean, he was transcendent. But is his manager in Korea as good?
He won Coppa Italia. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, you're right. But they haven't. Bryson Cicero, Cicero in the trap. Haven't seen that. I think I saw that name earlier. First time.
Bryson DeChambeau's in the trap.
Bryson DeChambeau with his protein shakes. Same fourth place. Pirlo was he was fired after his second season. I would like a Pirlo party.
Yeah, 1-34, drew 10, lost 8.
This is my new call. It's Kendrick Brock says, Tim, I'm not a fan, aka I'm not a fanboy. I'm just passionate. It's true. I don't know. They also brought up Frank Lampard as being available.
Premier League experience.
Yeah, I think Stevie G is holding out for Klopp's contract to run out. And he just won. Hey.
I mean, seriously, do you want Steven Gerrard to be the Liverpool manager?
Do I?
Serious question, yeah.
Fuck, you put me on the spot. This isn't going to sound good. No, probably not.
Yeah, that's the right answer. No, you don't.
No, it's very impressive that he...
Hey, DJ!
It's very impressive that he helped He helped Rangers unseat Celtic after whatever that rain was that they had. But yeah, I don't know. That's a good idea. Who else is available? Antonio Conte is available too, I think.
Got Inter to win the Serie A title. I think that was this last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, he managed Inter to win the title. So I don't know. It's tough, man. I don't know. Maybe Valentino's fucking awesome.
Hey, that's what happened with Dabo. He was interim head coach, got the head coaching position, won the team over, and now look at
it. You should see his house on Kiwi too. Like, he is doing well for himself. Like, he is crushing it. Yabo Dabo do. We need to find our own Dabo.
Exactly. Yeah, no,
That's what I'm saying. That's what makes Ted Lasso such a great show. It's a lovable manager that came in and made a club his own through a culture that he's created. And I think that's what this club desperately needs right now this club does not have a culture to which the players identify with, because there hasn't been one instilled by a managing coach over the past 5 years.
Wasn't there a parallel to be drawn between Ted Lasso and Heinze in the "I don't care if we win" mentality? It was very much like, I remember seeing that quote. I was just like, wait, where did I just hear that? Oh, you just got to say it with a Southern accent, some charm. And I think people would like it. I think people would be good with it. But yeah, I don't know, man. Do we have... We're an hour and 20 in. We're only 40 or 50 minutes into Kevin's. Do we have...
I'm just going through the trap and I saw Carl Seggy and just comment and just threw up in my mouth. Alan Pardew. Oh, God.
Yeah.
No. I saw Mark Hughes is available.
Oh, my gosh. Has anybody managed... I'd be interested to know, Dan... Who do you think has managed more clubs, Mark Hughes or Big Sam?
Big Sam, surely.
You think so? Yes, I felt like Mark Hughes coached a lot of teams in the late 2000s, but I may be wrong. Because he was there whenever the oil money first came into City, and then they were like, this guy can't win with all this money? Like, we have to let I guess he's coached 7 teams.
I feel like
Big Sam's probably managed, I don't know, 7 teams in the past 2 years. I don't know.
Yeah, you go through, there's the previous Watford manager, I can't remember his name, Octavio Flores.
Oh.
I think he's available, but he hasn't managed in a year. I mean, I feel like with some of these, you just kind of, you know, you just pull in names out of a hat with the people who are available. You've got to listen to rumors. But I think it makes sense to have some MLS experience.
Agreed. So, yeah, Octavio's saying in bringing in Sam Allardyce, you can now say bring in Sam. I've only been relegated one time in the 11 teams I've coached Allardyce, because it used to be he'd come in and rescue teams, but that wasn't the case this past season.
No longer.
Unfortunately for him, maybe we can get Roy Hodgson out of retirement.
God, Roy.
Good old Roy.
Good old Roy.
So, Kevin, why do you think you would make a good manager for Atlanta United?
I wouldn't. I'd be a terrible manager.
Delegate, delegate, delegate. There were plenty of people in the trap and on Twitter who were talking about... I was going to say the media availability seems to have already had a huge uptick today at Children's up in Marietta. Who was it? I lost it. There it is. Matt Wisniewski, bring in Berhalter. So it'd be a reverse FIFA. You start with the national team and then you get recruited by a club. I like it. And bring him in. Yeah. There's nobody else I can think of. They're going to hire somebody. They brought up Hernan Crespo yesterday, who I didn't even know was managing. I guess he's managing down in Brazil right now, and they have even shorter 10 years than we do at Atlanta United. Does anybody other than Toronto can you think of any teams that have had such a short managerial carousel or like timeline with managers, Dan?
I feel like surely there's Andre Villas-Boas. He didn't last too long here and there, did he? And then Mourinho, he's had some pretty short appointments.
No, I just mean in MLS. Did Andre Villas-Boas manage in MLS?
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
I know he's a free agent. I mean, he's looking for a job. not in my. I feel like Domé Torrent, did he even last the whole season? I think he did. I think he did the whole one season in NYC. GBS, did he make the whole season with LA Galaxy? I don't think he did.
I don't know that he did, yeah. No, he might have, because I feel like Vanny came in right after, right?
Mm-hmm.
I may be wrong.
Yeah. Now, Greg Vanny, that would have been a great coach to get.
But he's not South American, dude. I would have totally killed the South American pipeline, man.
Right.
Well, for fuck's sake. Yeah. For fuck's sake. I saw somebody also asking, can we kill that, please? Can we kill that narrative that we absolutely have to have a South American manager? Because it's not some silver bullet just because you're from South America that.
No. As we've seen, it's the culture that's the most important.
Yeah.
If you can create a culture that's accepting of failure, then people are okay. You know, you'll bring not complete failure, but you know, if people say, okay, I messed up, and say, okay, well, let's work hard. Let's figure out how we can fix whatever.
Yeah.
Diego Alonso works for Brian. That was Inter Miami's manager, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yep. He's gone. I mean, he's potentially bring him back. He's got some experience. I don't know how much real MLS experience he has though, because he had five DPs under him. Yeah. Kendrick Brock saying we need a manager to understand South American soccer culture though. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we're going to have to pick and choose. I mean, what we can. I feel like if you can bring in a culture and be accepting of other cultures, then, you know, because not every player we have South American, but probably our most expensive ones will be. Or just who's accepting and can change the way things, you know, turn about and how you bring about that culture and acceptance into the team.
I don't know where Kevin went, but he gone. He mm-hmm. gone. I do like the shout of Xavi from Octavio managing Al Saad in I believe in Saudi Arabia. Is that right?
I think so. I'm not sure.
No, Qatar. Qatar. Sorry. I don't know what happened to Kevin. I don't know where he went. Something tells me he's trying to pull a stunt, and I want to pull a stunt and end the show before he gets back. But
okay,
I think.
Octavio, Elliot Beaven saying maybe former women's world winner coach Jill Ellis. I remember Jason Longshore was talking about her because she was being considered, or there was rumors she was being considered for the DC United job. And his issue with her was she's just not tactically strong enough. I mean, she's coached teams that have the best players in the world that have not had much competition. So I don't know. I mean, potentially, but from what I've heard, she's not the tactical. She doesn't have that tactical acumen that we'd be looking for.
Well, that's good to know. Oh, wait, where did Kevin go? He said he had to go. He gave us his score predictions. Okay, never mind.
All right.
I wasn't checking the private chat.
Oh, yeah. So what are the, should we want to go into, I mean, I did some work for the download. Do we want to do that?
Yeah, go for
it. Unless you have any more management stuff.
No, go for it.
Okay. Cincinnati, they are, let me find my little standings thing that I had going on here. Jeez, what a freaking mess. All right. Cincinnati, they're 11th, just below Atlanta United. They have one game in hand against us and only 1 point behind us. They're on 12. We're on 13. They conceded a bag of goals, though. They've conceded 25 goals, scored 16. So they've scored three more goals than us. And they actually have the same amount of shots per game. I think it's 12.12 shots on that they have per game, which is the same as us. They've won three games. So they've equaled the amount of kits that we have. And they've lost six and drawn seven, where Atlanta United, we've won two, lost four, and drawn seven. So, I mean, they've been getting a lot better. I mean, they had a great game against Montreal this weekend and lost 5-4. So they've been they were two goals ahead at two times during that match. And then capitulated. I mean, Vermeer had one error where he just spilled the ball and Montreal were just able to capitalize. But Montreal had Torres playing for him, who I think he hit the post twice and finally scored a goal and maybe even got an assist. Montreal were very threatening. They deserved to win that game. They were like Cincinnati. That scoreline kind of flattered them a little bit. But of course, Luciano Acosta has given Atlanta United fits every time we've played him. Remember, we played him all those times with DC and just couldn't get a win. And then me and Tim were talking, went to Mexico and then came back for Cincinnati. So he's been playing really very good. It seems like Brenner's finding a little bit of form now. So, and they've had a very consistent 11 over the past five games. It was really the game against Montreal that kind of changed things up a bit. It seems like they've been going with a 4-3-3 every game, and then this one they put in an extra defender, Patterson, who came in, so they're playing a 5-3-2. And it was a more sort of a, if you look at the player positions, they played more of a defensive lineup, whereas in their past games, they do play defensive, but they also have more attacking looks where they're trying to get players forward. So Brenner will be that guy. He's always the point person who's that center forward who is always trying to get up the field. But it seems like it's the rest of the team that can sometimes pull him back. But having that support piece of Acosta behind him is really helpful. And he seems to have got a good relationship with Kubo in that lineup too. So the way I'm seeing it, they've got a left back. They've got old Edgar Castillo, who's, I believe he's got two goals for them. He scored a belter of a goal against Columbus. I
think the first minute of the game too, right?
Yeah, I think it was he just outside the 18, he just rifled it home. And he's actually been pretty good for them. He didn't play well against Cincinnati, but he's had ratings in the higher sixes in the past few games. It seems like they've got a good, solid centre-back in Valencilla, who I think is an Ecuadorian guy. He's been very good. He's been a consistent fixture along with Vermeer and Medjugunin. So they've got a good spine. It seems like Guyan on the right has been playing every single game. He's not been great. He's had a couple of games. I guess it was against Toronto and Chicago where he was getting a rating above seven, but the past few games he's kind of toned down a little bit.
About Joe Zhao, that guy?
Yes. I think so. I just pronounced it Guyan because I'm, just ignorant. But Boreal, he's been getting a good relationship alongside with Brenner. He's been a great guy. He's like the secondary goal scorer. You know, Brenner's got three goals, Boreal's got three. What is interesting that I found out by looking through some of the stats is that Cincinnati tend to score goals right at the beginning. They have seven goals scored in the first 15 minutes of a game. But then they tend, and then they're spaced out. They've got three goals at the first 15 minutes of the second half, and then they just kind of trail off from there. And then they tend to concede pretty much through the gamut of the match, but it seems like the middle of the second half, they've had six conceded. And then they've at the beginning of the game, they'll concede four, but they've been pretty porous. So hopefully this might help Atlanta. But if, you know, when we've been scored on first, it's been very difficult for us to get back into the game from then. So, and it's a high likelihood that with Cincinnati being at home, they could get an early goal and we'll kind of just go from there. Cincinnati have not been the best team, though. With everything that's going on, it's really kind of difficult to predict what is going to happen in this game.
Nonsense.
I feel like they start the roughly the same players that they've been going on with the past five games. So you've got from the top, you've got Atanga, Brenner, Boreal, and then in the middle three is Acosta, Kubo, Majunanin. They kind of seem to roam around with Acosta goes all over the place. Castillo at the left back, Valencia in the center backs, and it's either going to be, I think, either Haglund or Cameron. I'm not exactly sure why they haven't been as consistent. And then who did you say? Jao. So Jao will be at right back. He seemed to have solidified that. And then Vermeer in goal. Man, I'm not exactly sure how we're going to line up. I'm assuming because Sosa's back. We could go with a back three, a 3-5-2, but I think as Valentino wants to keep things the same, we'll probably play with that 4-3-3 and have Sosa drop back in between the two center backs. So it'll be interesting to see what tweaks we see going through this game. I'm going to go with, I don't know, man. I think it's going to be a 1-0 loss. I think it'll be like a silly error as well. So,
okay. I'll probably go with a 2-1 loss. I think we get in the, I have to believe we score against the second worst defense in MLS. You have to see that happening. And did you have anything for Columbus or just Cincy?
Just Cincinnati.
Okay.
I can only do one Ohio team at a time.
Yeah, that's fair. Just to go through real quick into the score predictions in the trap, Carl Seggy, 1-1 Wednesday, 2-1 Atlanta on Saturday at home against Columbus. You're a brave man. Carlos Rangel saying 3-0, new manager bump, Kubo hat trick with all three assists coming from Joseph. I'm here for the madness and the chaos. I hope that happens. I think Twitter would explode if that were to happen. Elliot Beaven, 3-0 Atlanta, 3-2 Atlanta. Let's see. Haleto saying Joseph hat trick 4-2 against Cincinnati. Kendrick Brock, 2-0 King Joseph with a brace, 1-1 draw against Columbus. Chiefs coach Steve, it's his birthday on Saturday. It's his birthday match. He's saying 4-1 Joseph hat trick in Cincinnati. Conway.
Oh,
gets
okay.
Another.
Oh, I didn't realize that throws everything out. So yeah, I'll go 4-1.
Yeah, Conway gets the other in the 4-1 against Cincy. He has 3-2 against Columbus. Scott McMillan, 2-1 Wednesday for Atlanta, I'm guessing, and then 2-2 Saturday. Richard Gordon saying 2-1 all both games this week. he meant to say ATL both games. I think it works, though. All both of the games, it's Atlanta wins 2-1. Alex Hoffner asking, new name in the trap. Thanks for the subscription. I saw the notification come through. He said, do we even make the playoffs this year? I think that might be a little too much for this discussion, but I say yes. I say
if we
make the playoffs.
If we make the playoffs, we are squeaking in there. We've still got a whole bunch of the season left, so the potential exists that we absolutely could.
Yeah.
I mean, Orlando's form has dropped in recent games. So, you know, form is always temporary, and maybe we can be the sleeping giant that kind of gets in there and then really kind of has a go at it. If we do, that could galvanize the team in terms of like, oh, we're all coming together and getting, you know, building our relationships back up.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know that I have anything else. Brian is asking if marjoram has arrived yet. No marjoram yet. No basil, no marjoram. we're still on Herb watch over here. So I guess we'll see. We'll see. We're on her time. We're on her clock. So it's
yep. And you will be for the next 20 years.
Oh, this is very true. I normally don't play us out here, but I would like to say thank you. We had up to, I think, something like 46 people watching live. We almost broke that 50 person threshold watching live at one point. And we still have people in the 20s of live viewers right now, which is crazy. An hour and 40, almost 40 minutes into the broadcast. We appreciate every single one of you guys for tuning in every single week, making us a part of your week, whether it's watching on YouTube. Make sure that you guys subscribe and join the fun. As you guys saw, we had a really lively trap tonight. It was fun to watch.
Yeah. The trap was awesome. It was popping.
We had the new manager bump in the trap. Let's keep it up. Let's see.
We're in the honeymoon period.
Let's see if we can keep it up. But make sure that you guys, if you guys are going to watch us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. We're on Twitch as well at, I think it's HB4D Pod on there. We had to choose a different name. And we broadcast on Periscope too, if you guys are on Twitter. If you guys are listening to us on iTunes podcast, what have you, the next day, leave us a rating and or a review. We'll read it aloud on the show. Dan, thank you for sticking with the entire broadcast.
You're welcome, Tim. I loved it.
It was a hell of a time. I we'll see when the next one is. If it's not me, then it's Dan and Kevin. And thanks, Kevin, for gracing us with your presence for 40 minutes. And everybody, God,
I hope he's better next week if you're not here.
Yeah. We'll see if he can operate StreamYard. we'll get that started first. But thank you guys. If you guys want to follow along with us on Twitter, we're pretty active and have fun trying to decide which one of the three of us it is tweeting. Follow us at Home Before Dark. That's B and the number 4. Dan, where can they follow you?
You can find me at DNJMS or on Peloton at To the Power of Dan.
Yeah.
Nobody has joined me on Peloton. Just want to put that out there.
You can find me on Instagram as Coach Steve Says. Y'all buy stuff from Tim's Woodwork. Yeah, at Tim Herb on Instagram.
That's a good point, because like your woodwork is legit. It's really good. Like, I'm not just saying that because you're my podcast pal, but it's actually legit good stuff. So
I appreciate it. Yeah.
People should actually do that.
Got a few months, but if you guys locals, I think I mentioned this on the last show. Actually, I know I did, because I'm pandering for people to come out. I just love to see you guys. We'll be out there at Candler Park, October 2nd and 3rd, at the Fall Festival. I'll have a booth with all the woodworks. Come get yourself a cutting board or a record stand holder or something like that. A chessboard, yeah, something like that.
Charcuterie boards that looked awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, there's stuff up in my Etsy store. But anyway, enough about me. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week. And as always, be home before dark. That's it. Nothing to play us out, dude. Skyline Chili is a farce.
He's...
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.